Carla, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, bro.
It's T.O.?
Yeah, what's up?
My man, hold on 1 second.
T.O.!
Hold on 1 second, man. We got to give you the clap, dog. T.O., thank you so much, man, for being patient and actually calling in and getting through. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's an honor to be able to talk to someone, a future Hall of Famer who should have been in the Hall of Fame, I mean, on the first take. So, I want to just say thank you, dog.
Oh, it's all good, man. I'm appreciative to be a part of this, and looking forward to next week.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we just want to ask you a couple questions, man, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, so I'm a big fan, man. I'm a Giants fan, but I'm a big fan. Read your book and stuff like that, and I know there was a lot of things in your book that if people didn't take the time to read it, they wouldn't know about you. And the book I'm talking about is Catch This. And one thing about it is that you grew up in Alabama, but you grew up, your mom, she worked double shifts, so your grandmother kind of raised you and stuff like that. But she had some really strict rules, like you couldn't leave the front porch, and even when you got a bike, you know, you had to ride in the driveway and stuff like that. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, I mean, everybody has a path, and, you know, for me, you know, that was a path that was given to me that I was that I took, and very appreciative. Wasn't at the time, you know, at how I was raised, how strict my grandmother was, but as you grow older and you go through life and you encounter a lot of situations, and sometimes it depends on how you respond or you act to those situations as to how you come out of those situations. So for me, I don't claim to be perfect by any means. I'm no different than any man walking this earth. We all make mistakes, and we try to do our best to live and learn and make the most of those life lessons. But for me, man, my grandmother, as you alluded to, my grandmother raised me. I'm proud of who I am today because of that. I've taken a lot of slack as far as my stance and really being who I am. Being an individual, being outspoken, but at the same time, with all the speculation, is you know, obviously what's swirling around with the Hall of Fame now, that I wasn't a good teammate, really categorizing me as a horrible teammate. For me, it's not so much about being in the Hall of Fame as my comments have been truly solely about really defending my character. Mm-hmm. So as you alluded to with the book. If you've had a chance and taken the chance to read about me or be around me just for a short period of time, then you'll definitely have your chance to really judge me accordingly. But for me, I'm always going to be who I am. I'm going to stand up for what I believe in, and I'm proud of how my grandmother raised me. I'm a person that doesn't have a rap sheet, so that speaks volumes for me and how I was raised, and that's why I hang my hat.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, T.O., man, when I read your book, man, I already was a fan, but when I read your book, it just gave me a new sight on the way that you think and the way that you are. One thing that was very important that I read was that your grandmother's mom, so your great-grandmother, disappeared, like, just was gone. And it was part of the reason why, you know, your grandmother was so harsh, like, so protected over you guys. You talk about that? Only because right now in this world that we live in, I don't think people really understand, like, you know, like, you lived in, like, the real times. Like, you're a real dude.
Well, yeah, it's unfortunate. My grandmother, you know, she and her mom left and disappeared all these years as we grew up. And there was a period in time, I think I may have been in college toward my end of my college career, or maybe into my my early years of the league, where she tried to find her, the whereabouts of her mom, and obviously unsuccessful. But I think talking to my mom about the situation, it weighed heavily on her as she was as I got older, as she got older. But again, those are some of the things that, you know, people don't ideally, if you don't know a person, you never know what a person is going through.
Correct.
For me, like I said, I can't say enough about my grandmother and how she raised me. She passed in 2012, obviously to Alzheimer's, where dementia obviously progressed into Alzheimer's. And like I told you earlier, everybody has a path on this earth for whatever reason. I never thought that I would play beyond the collegiate level. I've accomplished a lot, with a lot of hard work, a lot of dedication and desire and discipline. And so anytime that I can share that with, you know, especially a lot of the kids, especially the millennials, and anybody that really has that committed, that committed determination and dedication to the process of trying to be successful in whatever it may be. It doesn't necessarily have to be a sport. You don't necessarily have to be an athlete, but anything outside of that. When I reflect back on my career, I talk about the three D's. That's desire, dedication, and discipline.
T.O., you the man. I got one more question, then I'm going to pass it off. And this is something that I read about, and I'm sure a lot of people don't know, is that you actually wrote a children's book called Little T Learns to Share.
Right.
Yeah, can we talk about that? Because I want to ask you, I read that the proceeds went to charity. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, anytime, again, we know as we go through life, and especially I know Rashard, sorry about that, with Rashard, through his, you know, philanthropic efforts, being involved in the community, education is key. You talk about what he's trying to do with these college kids and raising money for scholarships. That's what it's all about. My involvement with writing that kid's book was really to promote literacy and at the same time really expressing to kids that education is key. The title of the book is Little T Learns to Share. And these are some of the things as I grew up. Again, they may be small and minute, but they go a long way as you go through life. That was just the first of, obviously we wanted to have more, many more series in that of that book, but it never happened. But that was just the start of it. But now what I've gone through in life, in football, I'm able to share that with kids and whomever may be accessible or receptive to it. So not only is Little T learned to share, but Big T has learned to share as well.
Nice. Go ahead, Slay.
T.O., Slay here. I want to start out by saying, you know, it's an honor to be interviewing you. I'm also going to be one of the coaches for the teams that you're playing on. And I've been a fan of yours.
If you're my coach, I'm not coming out, coach.
We're going to talk about that off the air. You might need a break to do some sit-ups or something.
Yeah, only during timeout.
You know, I'm a 49ers fan, so I've been a fan of yours from the beginning. I took a break off of you when you went to the Cowboys, and I came back after
sorry,
you.
Sorry to hear that.
After you left, but, you know, going from collegiate to your pro career with the 49ers, you caught a big pass from the legendary Steve Young. Tell us about that moment, one of the most historic catches in Niner history.
Well, I think there are some parallels to that game, and obviously it was a rough game for me in the beginning. You know, I had a few drop passes, had a fumble. But at the end of the game, you know, I made the big catch. So it obviously can be synonymous, you know, to life. I mean, there's going to be ups and downs and drops in life, but it's not really how you start, it's how you finish. You just got to stay the course, stay focused. And I had some people on that sideline that helped me stay focused. Because, I mean, I could have gotten off pass and really gotten frustrated with myself. But fortunately for me, I had some great teammates that were sticking by my side and just told me to stay with it. And at the end of the day, you know, it became a great result, especially toward the end of the game when all the chips were kind of on my shoulders. You know, he made a pass, and I made a catch, and the rest is history.
Now, that game, you broke out into tears after that catch. What was that moment? Was that the moment you felt like you arrived?
No, that never even, you know, entered my mind at that time in terms of my arrival. You know, me being in the National Football League, God bless me, that was my arrival. You know, I feel like I'm the prototype. That's who I am. The moment that I caught that pass and I fell to the ground when I got hit two times.
They sandwiched you.
The first thing and the first person that I thought about was my grandmother. And so basically I just gave praise to the man above and thanks to the man above. So that's what those tears of joy was because, you know, my grandmother always told me through hard times, good times, bad times, always remain faithful, always have that faith. And faith is really relying on something that you really don't know the outcome, but you're expecting it. You know what I mean? So that's what I did. I just relied on my ability to really come up with a big play and stay true to myself. And, again, like I said, I couldn't have done it, honestly, without, you know, the support of my teammates. So that was what those emotions were about.
Yeah, I may have reenacted that moment in between two pillows on the couch couple of times. Now, I'm going to bring you back to another historic moment. The legendary Jerry Rice goes down. I believe he tore his ACL. Guy by the name of Terrell Owens comes into the light. What was that moment like? Did you feel like that was your moment, that the torch was passed to you?
No, that definitely wasn't a moment where I felt like the torch was passed. That was a moment that God provided an opportunity not only for myself but other players on that team as well. You talk about J.J. Stokes, who obviously was the other receiver on the other side of the field at that time. So with me, they looked at me. I was still young. That was like my second year in the league. Mm. First game of the season, the greatest receiver of all time, he goes down. So they're looking for somebody to kind of fill that void and fill those shoes.
Mm-hmm.
To me and the organization, trust me, I'm sure they didn't have any idea who was going to fill that void and who was going to fill those big shoes.
Yeah.
But I stepped up to the plate. I understood what I had done throughout the offseason in terms of my preparation to prepare myself for that moment. And that's what God does for a lot of us, man. He puts us in positions. He provides opportunity. And it's up to us as individuals, up to us as prototypes to seize that moment, to take advantage of the opportunity. So that's what I do. And when opportunity presents itself, that's what I've done throughout my whole entire career.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't looked at as a high school All-American or anything coming out of high school. I wasn't heavily recruited, highly recruited, even when I came out of college. I was only seen as a guy that had the measurables, the attributes of receivers that were before me. You talk about the Jake Reeds, the Herman Moores, the Jerry Rice, the John Taylors. These were guys that I resembled. I had those physical attributes in terms of my height, my wingspan. Those are some of the things that got me drafted. But it was up to me to put in that hard work to remain consistent and the longevity.
T.O., I read somewhere that Jerry Rice was your idol. Is that so? And if so, how was it for you to be able to play on the team with him and to learn from him?
Yeah, don't take this the wrong way. I never really, in the beginning, saw him as an idol, but I saw him as a talent. I wasn't a guy that really watched football. I didn't really know about Jerry Rice until like my junior year in college.
Mm-hmm.
We've already discussed, my grandma was very, very strict.
Okay.
I watched very little TV.
Yeah.
So I had no knowledge about any football, the NFL. I was like every other kid. I watched basketball all the time. So around that time, it was the Showtime Lakers. It was the Chicago Bears. It was the bad boy Detroit Pistons. These are the teams that, growing up, that's what I watched.
Mm-hmm.
I loved basketball. That was my passion. So no disrespect to him at that time, but again, once I realized that I was going to a team to play with one of the greatest receivers of all time, I was enthusiastic about that moment.
Yeah.
So again, and actually to share the same air, sit in the locker room right next to him, so he wasn't an idol at that time, but he became one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This is Ray here. I wanted to know. You just finished talking about how really your passion was for basketball. So why football instead of basketball, you know, when making a choice to be an athlete and to go out and play sports?
Well, again, I didn't really I did not play what I loved. And when I was in college, I played 3 years college basketball. I walked on the basketball team my sophomore year. My freshman year, we had a coach that wouldn't allow football players that came in on a football scholarship to play other sports.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I, you know, after that freshman year, our coach got fired. The next coach came in, and I asked him after the season if I could play, if I could walk on. And he basically proposed it to me like this. He goes, he asked me if I could play basketball, number one, and then he asked me, the other question was, can I make the team? And so he basically said that if
are you good?
You know, he basically said if I can go make our basketball team, which these guys are being recruited, the guys that were on the team, they got scholarships for playing back. Mm-hmm. Because that will tell me what type of athlete you are. Mm-hmm. So long story short, I played 3 years college basketball. That was probably the best time of my collegiate career. I'm talking about I established a lot of great relationships with those mm-hmm. guys on that team. Literally, like I said, that was probably the most fun that I had in college. And I played football. But I didn't limit myself just to football. I considered mm-hmm. myself an athlete. Mm-hmm. Even when I played football and I was just starting to learn how to play receiver, mm-hmm. I was raw and green. They saw me, I'm telling you, I was drafted off potential.
Yeah,
so when I don't really consider myself, I'm listed as a receiver behind one of the greatest of all time, Jerry Rice, mm-hmm. but I consider myself an athlete because I can do a number of sports, and I don't limit myself. So that's my message to kids. Don't mm-hmm. limit yourself. Don't put all your eggs in one basket because you'll find yourself disappointed if you don't make it in that particular sport. Mm-hmm. Not to say don't have the determination and drive to pursue it mm-hmm. and be all that you can be, but also open the door, be open-minded to other sports because you never know. Look what happened to me. My love was basketball, and I ended up becoming one of the best football players to lace up a pair of cleats.
Ever. I read somewhere that you played in the March Madness tournament during your time playing collegiate basketball.
Yeah, that was my senior year. We got into March Madness. We got into the regional play, and our first game, we played against UConn. So I played against Ray Allen. I didn't get to play the game.
Okay.
But I was sitting on the sideline, and so that for me that was a feat that I never thought I would be able to accomplish. Mm-hmm. But being a part of something special, me pursuing the fact that my love for the basketball, walking on and making it, I was able to do, you know, and participate in the regional, in the Final Four, in March Madness, as you mentioned. So again, I've experienced a lot in my career,
mm-hmm.
And continuing to experience a lot. So again, basketball is an awesome sport.
And so now I want to just take a little turn. I want to talk to T.O. now, because I want to take you into the T.O. days. I don't want to talk to, you know, to Terrell Owens. I want T.O.
Terrell.
I want the guy who bust the Sharpie out his sock, wrote on the football, and passed it off. I want, like, what was that moment of becoming, you know, the celebrations and everything like that? What made you do that, those type of things, and where did you get your inspiration from?
Number one, to do something like that, number one is confidence. It didn't have anything with arrogance or being cocky.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to try to be creative with the touchdown celebrations that I was doing. So I just basically thought of it at that moment, the series before, to do something creative. And
mm-hmm.
again, something creative, small, minute, turned into a big story that now you guys are talking about it 20-something years later.
It's historic.
So, again, that's what I feel like I am, man. Again, I keep mentioning the prototype. That's mm-hmm. who I am. I stand out. I'm outspoken. But at the same time, I'm respectful.
Yeah.
I know who I am. I know how I was raised. So that should be taken into account when people are trying to judge my character.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I don't have any criminal records, I'm not doing anything outlandish, unlawful, then I feel like, you know, me being outspoken, that's the least that I can worry about.
Let me cut you off quick, T.O. Now, you keep saying you didn't break the law, you didn't do... We are fans of the shenanigans.
Yeah,
like, we like T.O. Like, all of that, when you change the game, you literally made them have to put celebrations in Madden and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, so I want to first to say, like, you know, we definitely feel... You should have been a Hall of Famer, first ballot, and everything
that. Oh, it's all good. I appreciate it, man.
None of the shenanigans and all that changes anything for us. Like.
Right. And I think the Hall of Fame stuff has run its course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to keep, you know, beating a dead horse, but my thing is I don't necessarily have to, you know, be in the Hall of Fame to validate.
You're T.O. You are T.O.
But at the same time, like I said, I've been in defense of my character.
Yeah. We don't want you to be. We want you to be yourself.
About you as a person and
mm-hmm.
as a human being, that's what I have an issue about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agree. Respect for that, too.
So,
So, T.O., I remember reading in your book, I think I remember this, that when they talked about the celebrations and the touchdown celebrations, I think you said something like how hard it is and how very few people actually get in the end zone in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. And that you really felt like, you know, once you made it there, you know, it was a way of saying, like, you were celebrating because it's such a hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that in itself, but at the same time, I understand the entertainment value that I brought to the game as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
while playing and celebrating and doing all the fun stuff. So it just so happened a lot of people didn't agree with the way that I celebrated. I mean, it's too bad that was their take or their outlook on it. But again, like I said, I was having fun. That's what it's about, you know.
Me too. When you was on the Niners, I was having fun too.
So I got we have like two more questions, and we're gonna let you go. We know you're a busy man. We can't thank you enough
mm-hmm.
for taking this time out. Number one, for even being involved in the event, which is going to be a great event. I want to ask you about the episode when you went to the Star, because I'm a Giants fan. When you went to the middle of that Star in Dallas and you did what you did there, what was that about and how'd that play out?
Well, again, you guys have followed the NFL Network Football Life. It basically explains it. I explained it on there. My receiver coach, George Stewart, he went on to defend and explain it. After all these years, I've tried to explain it and to tell them that it wasn't any disrespect toward the Cowboys, you know, Emmitt Smith or anybody at that time. That was just part of an extension of my creativity and my touchdown celebration to go to the Star and give thanks to, you know, to what God sees as God's country. And for me, I'm God's child. So I was giving, you know, him praise for allowing me to do what I did on the football field. But again, a lot of people took that the wrong way because, again, they didn't understand who I was. They didn't understand why I was doing it. I can see that. But other than that, man, like I said, I'm very confident in what I've done throughout my career. I still stand by the reason why I went to the Star, and it's a matter of opinion. You either like it or you don't like it. So at that time, if you was a Dallas Cowboys fan, you didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
If you was a T.O. fan or a San Francisco 49er fan, you
loved it.
I loved it.
T.O., let me ask you, who was the toughest cornerback who ever guarded you? Like, who was...
The toughest corner would be Aeneas Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that early on in my career because we played St. Louis Rams twice a year. Again, that were things that, again, he did to me or presented challenges for me during the course of the game where I had to get my game tight and nice, you know, every year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I prepared myself for during the offseason because there were guys that were preventing me and presenting challenges for me getting in that end zone and celebrating.
Yeah.
So I had to do whatever I could to make that happen.
I don't think I ever seen anybody with as much will and drive as you were when you got hurt and came back for that Super Bowl game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as a Giants fan, I'm watching football as a football fan, and I just saw you go out there and leave everything on the field.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're going to tell me that it comes from, you know, your upbringing and stuff like that, but can you talk about it a little bit, like what you went through? I mean, because the horse collar, didn't that rule come in effect because of you?
Yeah, that, and again, I mean, toughness, man, that's something that you can't really coach. That's toughness. Everything else in between the ears, there's a little bit of that, but again, the things that you do between the lines, with the things that you do to prepare yourself to make happen in those lines, that's what you have control over. So for me, that's been my motivation for everything that I've been able to accomplish.
Yeah, okay. They say you was out there like, man, I'm on a half leg out here. They can't guard me.
Before we get ready to close out, Slay's going to ask my last question, but I wanted to ask you really quick. I listened to you. You mentioned yourself looking at yourself as the prototype a couple of times, and I read you have a clothing line called the Prototype 81, and I've read that you're into a lot of things like, you know, philanthropist, public speaker, fitness. How important was it for you to maintain so many, you know, just to be in so many different lanes to just kind of keep the T.O. brand relevant and stable all of these years? How important was that?
Well, I think the NFL afforded me the opportunity to establish, number one, who I am on the football field, establish that brand. I think everybody that knows me, I play with a lot of charisma, play with a lot of passion, And that's really just an extension of me. So, again, knowing the value of entertainment, the value of what I've been able to establish with myself as a brand has opened a lot of doors. Otherwise, hadn't I been the person that I was on the football field, those doors wouldn't be so easily accessible or open. So I realized that, the power of branding and marketing, and so that's what I'm trying to continue to do, you know, life after football. So Prototype 81, my clothing line, that's really an extension of me. It's a reflection of my career. When you talk about being outspoken, setting yourself apart, being bold, vibrant, my clothing line will reflect that. We're using, you know, fabrications that are equivalent to all the quality brands that are out there in the market. But what I'm bringing to the table is something unique, something different. So
yeah, just don't chop holes in it like Kanye West.
Ready. Just don't drop the butter on my clothes.
All right, so, Slay got the last question.
Yeah, just to wrap it up, you know, what can people expect from you March 10th? You know, especially with me being your coach, like, tell them something that's going to scare the other team, man.
and T.O., I'm coaching the other team, so.
Tell them, well, scare them, man.
If you're coaching the other team, you already got a hard job. So,
yeah.
Just put yourself in a lot of elite company with people trying to stop you. So, other than that, you know, my coach, you know who to do it. You know whose hand to put the ball in. I'm gonna be number eight Kobe.
The eight Kobe,
passing.
The young one.
You're not passing.
The young one.
Kobe, not passing.
Yo, before we let you go, we do have to mention Monty Love, because Monty Love, we did an interview with Monty Love. And,
That's my guy.
Yeah, and we talked about, you know, you guys playing each other, and he brought you up and stuff like that. Just explain that relationship that you guys have, and when you play him, do you play him seriously or do you give him a break?
You know what? That's a prime example that a person of not allowing limitations to stop you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here this guy is. I don't even know if he's 3 feet tall.
Yeah.
But the fact that he's his height, possessed the skills of average great basketball players, is an inspiration not only to me, but should be an inspiration to a lot of kids out there that feel, you know, they have limitations. Look at a guy like that that's still pursuing his dream. Again, we're very competitive. I met this guy, and again, you look at him, you're like, oh, I can take this guy, or you want to take it easy on him. This guy's going to bring it 181%. That's what he does. He has a heart as big as his dream. So that's what I like about Money, and our relationship has, I mean, the day that we played against each other at Equinox, again, our friendship started to flourish from there. We've been friends ever since.
T.O.?
T.O., before you go, what's your favorite popcorn?
I just like regular popcorn, buddy. Just extra butter. You know what I mean? Layered butter, I'm good.
All right, we might have to do something on March 10th.
T.O.,
all right, cool.
We want to thank you for taking the time out, man. I'm telling you, you got three big fans and a lot of listeners that's listening in. We're so proud, and we feel so privileged that you're coming to this tournament. And I'm sorry that I'm going to have to beat you, but it's going to have to go. Hey, man, thank you so much, man. Enjoy your day, and we'll see you on March 10th, man.
Yeah.
Okay, cool, man.
Yeah, thanks, T.O. All right.
Yeah.